So if you'd like to participate in any of the Chicago Teachers Union research, you'd like to offer your services, do an internship, you should call Carol Careff, C-A-R-E-F, and her number is 312-329-9100. I don't know what the specific number is, but it's 312-329-9100. Or you can go on the CTU website and look up Carol Careff. She's the head of our research department. Hazarai? Do you all know what Hazarai is? It's garbage. It's like junk. You know. Where do I get that from? You know, I don't know. I've always been this way. I didn't think it was something special. Okay, I think that I'm not, you know, when you're a little kid and you kind of realize that everybody, as my father used to say, puts on their pants one leg at a time. For me, it was realizing that everybody had to go to the bathroom. It kind of equalizes you. You know, it doesn't matter how much money you have, you still have to take care of things that aren't so good, right? So, it's not that I don't have respect for authority. It's just that if people are doing things that are wrong, you have an obligation to speak out against that. I just think a lot of people are terribly misguided, and I think that's it. I don't believe that most people do things out of intention and they're horrible people. I don't believe that. I think they do things for all the right reasons, and they just may be the wrong things. Yes?
Jeanette. I just want to ask if you could comment a little bit about the privatization schemes in the public sector in general and in education specifically.
All right, so this is an agenda that's been around since the early 70s, started here in Chicago, of course, where all the other great things start. At the University of Chicago, they called it the Chicago Boys. And there was a group of Chilean business students who were under the thrall of Milton Friedman and folks of that nature. And they were also huge fans of Ayn Rand. And they took this back to Chile, where they decided that public goods needed to be in private hands. So we have had a good 40 years of constant attack on the public sphere and on the common good. So we've had public schools, private schools, public parks, private parks, you know, which are better. You know, so we've had public bathrooms, you know, private bath. I mean, you think about it, they could put the word public on it. There's always been, they've cast aspersions on it. So there's been not just an economic force of let the marketplace decide everything, but there's also been at the same time a public relations engine saying that public is no good. And that poverty is caused primarily because people are deserve to be poor. They're not working hard enough. They're not doing what they should be doing, because if you do right and you work hard, the market will always, you know, allow the cream to rise to the top. I mean, so there's this, but that's what they've done. And there are a lot of people, you know, good human beings that believe this in their heart of hearts, because they have evidence of it. So I mean, it's not hard to see how these things happen. So, but the privatization issue of transferring public funds and transferring public entities into private hands has been going on for a long time. We've seen the debacles, like the parking meter scandals. You know, I don't think the parking meters are any better than they ever were when the public owned them, and they're certainly much more expensive. So it turns into a very regressive tax. But you have that combined with a push to lower income taxes and taxes on the very wealthy, you know, in this idea that they will share, which they don't. No, it's true. They've actually done the studies over and over again, especially in charitable giving. People that have more give significantly less than people who have less. So, I mean, but none of that matters because, you know, the rich and the wealthy know better for the rest of us, and we should just listen to them and follow what they say. I saw this brother here, and then back there.
Sure.
State law allowed the Board of Education to not negotiate with us over class size in 1995. It has been that way ever since. Now, does the union and the board negotiate class size to a certain degree? Yes. But it is not a mandatory subject of bargaining, which it is in every other district in the state.
That's just something you cannot approach legally?
No, not unless the board wants to. Not unless they want to, because it's a permissive subject of bargaining.
Mm-hmm. Legally or illegally strike about school closing?
No, we cannot strike about that. Legally, no, we can't. And illegally, I'll be honest with you, if I'm going to go to jail, can I go to jail for, you know, something that I can fix, you know? No, we can't strike over that. And then our contract that we just ratified does have a no-strike clause in it. In terms of plans of action, the Chicago Teachers Union has changed its focus. And one of the things that we do believe is in direct action and in civil disobedience. And we are training people in direct action and civil disobedience. And is Marty here? Where's Marty? Marty, can you speak to this? And speak to some actions. And you should have gotten some flyers about coming to some of these meetings.
Hi, everybody. I'm Marty. I'm an organizer with CTU. I was a high school history teacher for 8 years prior to that. If you want to help out, if you want to join this movement, this grassroots education movement, you can. It's very easy. The quickest way is go on the CTU website tonight when you're at home and sign up for the email alerts and put in your code, like your zip code, so that you can identify local actions and activities and organizing meetings in your own neighborhood with your own neighbors. So that's the best way to build power locally. We will kind of figure out, you know, strategies for different areas of the city, but local action is the most powerful action. There is probably 150 community hearings, more meetings that the board is going to have on these school closures. They're in every corner of the city. They're almost all of them in the evening, on the weekdays. Attend them. Sign up to speak. Speak up. Let them hear your righteous anger and tell them what they're doing is wrong. You can't close schools to improve schools, okay? So let them do that. Or you should do that, okay? And lastly, register to vote. Register everybody in your neighborhood to vote. Get with people who think like you, who how you feel about public education, and let's really make a change. Let's elect responsible people who know what public education is at the aldermanic level, hopefully at the mayoral level, at the county level, at the state level, etc. Okay? Lastly... please stay involved. Don't give up this. If you're chilling during the summer, don't stop reading. Don't stop linking with people. And we appreciate you letting us come out today.
Well, I think the key to technology is that technology has to be used appropriately. Technology in itself is not going to change anything. I mean, has it changed poverty? You know, has it addressed the needs of people who are hungry and live in food deserts in this city? No, it hasn't in this country. So, I mean, people love the technology bandwagon because it sounds so good, and Bill Gates will make a whole lot more money off of it while he's pushing that. The key is to use it responsibly, use it effectively, and to have people who know how to use technology to the advantage of their students, i.e., you still need teachers, guys. You still need paraprofessionals, and you still need clinicians to provide the kind of wraparound services that students need. But absolutely, I mean, I love toys. I'll be honest with you. I love toys. So as far as technology is concerned, I love it. I think it's made my life tremendously better. But it is not a solution to a problem. It is a tool to be used appropriately. Yes, sister. Well, I would say that that's not going to be true. That's the good news. I mean, is it going to be a hard life? Yes, it is. It's not going to be the way it used to be, but it's not going to be the way that it's going to be either. So the key is how do you decide this is what I want to do? So to teach is not to be passive. And I think what we need to understand is teaching is an active involved profession. And if we think we're just going to just go back to following orders and doing things the way we're told, I think that would be a mistake and that the other side gets to win. So for me, what I would tell pre-service teachers is that you are on the cusp of a very exciting and adventurous new profession, not one that's going to be destroyed because you are not going to allow that to happen. That's what I would tell you. Yes? Well, all right, so here's the one cool thing about this job and all of that is that I am like a geek, so all the really exciting people in educational theory and, you know, who have done all kinds of cool things or people that have written books, I call them or I email them and they take my calls. And they send me books so to me, that's the best part of this. I mean, I've gotten calls from, you know, a lot of people that just keep asking, what can we do to help? That's what the calls have all been about. How can we help? And I think that's a really positive thing that people see, that fighting for public education is worth doing because the overwhelming majority of people in this country were educated in public schools. Yes, sister. First of all, I don't believe that charter schools are better. The data do not show that. However, charter schools are very good at marketing. So let me give you an example. There's a charter school that says 100%, we have 100% graduation rate. How many people have heard that? 100% graduation rate. All right, they don't really mean that. They don't mean that kids start in ninth grade and graduate in 12th grade. That's what a graduation rate really is. What they mean is that 100% of the kids that are seniors, they get into college, okay? Which I think is great. Let's give them kudos for what they do, not for their marketing piece about, which is a lie, because they don't have 100% graduation rate. Right? So, but general traditional public schools are not allowed to tell those kinds of lies because there are sanctions that come along with that, right? In addition, traditional public schools must educate whoever comes across their doors. Charter schools get to push out people. If your son causes too much trouble, they're going to be calling you, and they're going to tell you maybe there's someplace better that would suit your child, because charter schools are about fit, right? Because that's the whole notion of the market value of anything. It's about where do you fit? So will there be equal education opportunity in Chicago ever? There never has been. There never has been. And there never will be, because we do not live in an equal society. And we do not live in a society that even values equality. We have some nice words that we say, you know, justice and equality for all. We say these words, but nothing in the way that we do shows that. Now, Can we push the Board of Education to fulfill its fiduciary interests to do that? Absolutely. Should we do that? You better believe it. And how do we do that? By mass action, by parents being extremely forceful with them and saying, you know what? But I have seen many board meetings where parents who have been waiting for a roof on their building for years are trying to understand why they're building a brand new school over here when this school. So the issue is, who has access and clout? That goes back to what we were talking about earlier, about who has access to the decision makers. And it's mostly people with clout and money or whatever. So the key is to become more political and to also push your politicians. That's why it's important that everyone register to vote. Even though people feel like their vote doesn't count, it won't if you don't.
Working at Victor Herbert Elementary, which is mm-hmm. a school that is slated for being invaded by another school. Debt Elementary is going to come in, and they're going to fire all the teachers at Victor Herbert and have the staff from Debt come in and take over. They've been off probation for 3 years. I had the principal on the radio last week. She's a very brave lady. I invited the principal from where I did my student teaching in to be on the radio. He said, oh no, he had to wait for permission from the Board of Ed. He never got permission. She didn't wait for permission. She just came in and she spoke to me, which I thought was really courageous.
And it's unusual.
All the wonderful things that the school mm-hmm. is doing. And how, exactly, mm-hmm. it's very unusual. And that she stepped up to the plate to speak up for her school and the community. What can we do to help schools like that? Now, that's not exactly a closure. It's a repurposing.
Right. Yeah, I mean, but that's all in the Broad Handbook, too. They even have little school buildings. They have pictures of it showing, you know, teachers leaving here and faculty and staff just disappearing into thin air and bringing it. I mean, it is a very sick thing. Look, the key is that we have got to continue to resist the unjustness of this. You have to come to the meetings. You have to testify. You have to show the statistics. Because when they do close the schools, if they decide to, they have to be held accountable. You have to go. I mean, like, today was a board meeting. And normally I'm at the board meetings. And go to the board meetings. Call the board members. Every last one of them cannot take real pressure. If the community steps up and puts the pressure on these people individually, then they will start making decisions. As far as the mayor, I mean, he's just crazy. I said I wasn't going to call people names today. He is crazy, though. I know, right? No, the truth will make you free. Let's have the correct ontological issue here, because setting you free is somebody else doing it, right? So we're going to take responsibility for that ourselves. You know, it's just, it's relentless pressure. You just cannot give up. You cannot give up. And even to the point of, as I said, civil disobedience. Whatever we do, we will call attention to this unjustness. And to have that information available to people, every one of you needs to talk to 5 or 10 more people. Tell them the truth and have them talk to 5 or 10 more people. The key is to continue to spread the truth. If you're just listening to the news, I mean, most people listen to the news and they think I'm so mean and I'm so crazy and, you know, all these things. And then I'll do these little things and they'll come up to me later and they'll say, you know what, you're really nice. You know, people don't know that about you. And and every picture of me in the Tribune is, right? Some ugly picture. I can't even tell you how many times people have actually come up and said, you know what, you're really pretty. Thank you. You know, it's like. So, I mean, we're fighting a juggernaut, but it can be done. You just have to be relentless. And sometimes when you're tired, it's okay, but you keep getting back up. Yes. Are we on schedule? Yeah, one more question? Yeah. All right, you got on a red shirt. Come on.
Yeah.
Got to ask a guy in a red shirt, right? Well, first of all, it's not true. Okay. So that's the beauty of the people using these numbers, not knowing what they're talking about. So when you factor out poverty in America, our students come in first in reading and science. They come in third in math. on the so-called, you know, big tests, international tests, like PISA, like TIMSS. We actually do better on TIMSS. It depends on which set of numbers they want to show, because they don't want to show the ones that don't push their agenda. What they don't talk about is that we have the highest rate of child poverty in the industrial area, and we also use all of our children test as opposed to, and it's not all of China, by the way, it's Shanghai, which is a city, right? It's not China, and they talk about Finland. Finland, they don't even test their children. They test their children once in their entire career. The children go to school like maybe 3-4 hours a day. You know, the children don't even learn to read until they're in like second grade. And I love when they talk about Finland, and they'll say, "Well, that's because Finland's so homogeneous." No, that's because they have a 4% child poverty rate and are embarrassed about the 4%. You know, we got a 25% child poverty rate. We don't want to talk about it. So, and there are no private schools in Finland. And so the other issue to go along with that is to use the numbers appropriately, okay? Put things in perspective and remember why the numbers are the way they are. And they're higher than they've ever been. The United States has always been at the middle of the pack. They act like this is something that just happened last year. And students in places like Massachusetts and New Jersey do way better than all of these people in different schools. They're highly unionized states, because you'll hear that, you know, it's the unions where it's all our fault. But then again, why are the southern states where there are no unions, why aren't they kicking our butts, you know? So you have to remember that you have to fight what sounds, it sounds like, you know, they're right, and, you know, da-da-da, unpack the data. It's, and that information is readily available if people want to really know it.